and failing probably again.
Roberto Lovato and Margarita Lopez Maya, we want to thank you both for being with us. Margarita Lopez Maya, professor with the Center for Development Studies, Roberto Lovato with New American Media. That does it for our broadcast. We're on the road on Tuesday. We'll be in Amherst, University of Massachusetts Amherst, March 11th at 7 p.m. On Thursday, the 13th, in Flagstaff at Northern Arizona University at the Klein Library at 7. Friday, March 14th at Santa Fe at the Lensic. And on Saturday, March 15th in Denver, Colorado. Then to St. Louis on March 29th. You can go to our website for details at democracynow.org. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Berkman, Nafel Sarah, Martin Emery, Shakes, Steve Martinez, Sam Alcoff, Hani Masood, Rabbi Karen, Dina Guzder, Amy Littlefield. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Thanks for joining us.
You're listening to WHFR Dearborn. This is time now for our public affairs show, and we call it the new WHFR Journal. Hello and welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal. This one is for Friday, March the 7th. And my name is Jay Koronik. Happy to be with you today, along with John Conroy, our Downriver WHFR reporter. How are you doing, John?
Very fine, Jay. How are you, sir?
Okay. Downriver is still there.
Yes, we are.
Okay. You didn't flood out yet because of all the melting today. Imagine how much melting there might be. 39 degrees high. So
this weekend could be interesting.
Yep. Could be a flood. Yeah, I bet there will be flood warnings if it stays melting for a couple days. I doubt it will, but you know, Michigan winter here, it's never over till it's over.
We've still got some time, I think.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we're looking here at local news and alternative views for Dearborn and the Downriver area. And so I wanted to mention, first of all, from last Friday, we did announce here that it was official, at least by some sort of press announcement, that Debbie Dingell is going to run for the office of her husband, John Dingell, since he's retiring. He announced his retirement last week, Monday, and there were rumors and so on. And but, John, you actually saw a story that mentioned someone who's actually already announced she's going to be running against her. And the issue is she going to, you're talking about a Democrat in the Democratic primary, or will it be a Republican? Or
I believe it's a Democrat in the same primary, in the same party, and it's a UAW worker that's
sure
running. I don't have the number or his name at the time in my head. Don't have that right in front of me.
Okay, okay. We'll get back to our listeners on that one. But obviously, there will be challengers within the Democratic Party, I would think, as well as the Republican Party, and other parties will be there in the actual election too, which will be in November this year. And the primaries are always the first Tuesday in August. So it's an important time to get there to vote. Although the name Dingell has, sort of an automatic vote casting built right into it, situation built right into it, because a lot of people, and I'm sorry to say that the majority of voters, according to many political science surveys, they just vote for a name they recognize, and they really don't know who they're voting for, even if it's a son, a daughter, a relative, or no relation, but has the same name. And that's disturbing, but that's a fact of our democracy and our educational system, I'm sorry to say. I can blame education on that a little bit. And the news media, they don't give enough coverage constantly, maybe boring to some people, of who our representatives are, what they're doing, and even try to figure out why they're doing it. And, of course, on this show, we go crazy with that, but only for an hour, once a week. All right. So she will have some competition, although I can't believe the Democratic Party, if there wasn't a primary, if it was just within the party itself, they would want the name recognition of Debbie Dingell. There's no doubt that the party machine, the Democrats, want that name, and because they want to hang on to the seat in Congress, the vote. They want it to be a Democratic person who will vote for the Democratic Party position, whatever that is. Okay. But we're going to look at other stories here from the Dearborn Press last Sunday. I know it's a long way back, but buried in the back of the paper, and that's why you love this show, because we dig. We dig, yeah. Mayor O'Reilly is upset about a legislator and her name, and we mentioned the story. She was someone who, on her taxes, she and her husband said that they were actually using two houses in different cities as their residence. And so they were getting the residential tax credit for both places. One was in Dearborn. And on page 7A in last Sunday's paper, her name is, and I don't even think I mentioned her name last week, Rashida Talab. And she did mention last week that she'll pay whatever is owed. And it was an honest mistake. A lot of people do it. And it's just crazy to me. She's got a tax person that prepares it. So she should make him or her pay for the fine, because they're not really very good as a tax person. I mean, that's a fairly simple issue. Which is your sole place of residence? Okay, I mean, even if you're using TurboTax, it won't let you. It'll say that's an error. Somebody's going to jump on it. It won't let you do that. So it's a human error. Yeah, but from a professional tax accountant, and then I think I even pointed out that maybe Rashida is even a college graduate. Mm-hmm. Very embarrassing. Mm-hmm. Well, then she says, "Oh, you know," and I'm getting into a Jon Stewart insulting accent here. On the Daily Show, he always does that. But she says, without the accent, she says in the story that the city should have caught that, the city of Dearborn. And there should be, they should get their assessors and residential services department to cross-check their list to see if there's any similar errors. Well, here's the story, directly from the story, impressing it. The request drew the ire. And you know what ire is? That's anger, okay, kind of worse, of Mayor Jack O'Reilly, who said that the city already does that with properties in the city, and it's nearly impossible for his city to know if someone is claiming primary residences in different communities, which is the situation with the Talabs. And he says, how come the state failed to find it? It seems that that's a state responsibility to cross-check those things. And of course, I guess the state of Michigan doesn't have enough people employed in the Income Tax Bureau to actually cross-check these things. Here, a representative she's a Democrat from Detroit, but there's part of Dearborn that is in her district through gerrymandering, and she doesn't even know that it's a state responsibility to double-check on that. Or maybe she did know, and her accountant did know, and that's why they put it down in error, so-called, to get away with it. I don't know. I'm just saying, I can't believe that educated people, she and her accountant, would do something so simple that even a tax prep program, computer program, wouldn't let you do. And then she criticizes Dearborn for not checking, when obviously a smart person who is an elected representative even would know that the state are the only people that have the resources or the information where they could do that cross-checking.
Well, and you would think that you would, if you're a politician, you might be held to a little higher level of responsibility
I would like to believe that, you know, yeah, yeah. Although some people say, I want to vote for somebody just like me. And there's an insulting accent I just did, if anybody caught that. And no disrespect to people that talk that way, of course. Remember, all the opinions and accents that are used on this show are not necessarily those or approved by Henry Ford Community College. All right, just... we got that out of the way, so we can't get into too much trouble now, or can we? I was a little testy over that, as Mayor O'Reilly was. Who does she think she is to make that kind of criticism? She's obviously somebody who's unintelligent. I'm not saying she's dumb, but I'm just saying unintelligent in several ways here. Mm-hmm. It's revealed. So people, you say, well, the people in her district, they won't reelect her now. She can't be reelected. She's term limited. But guess what? She's announced she's running for a Senate redrawn 4th District seat, which covers part of Detroit and all of Allen Park, Lincoln Park, and Southgate.
There you go.
So we won't get rid of her, but she's going to switch districts, so a lot of those same people won't know that she's not smart enough to know these things about how to do her taxes or who supervises this particular problem of claiming residences in two cities. So that's my comment. Take it as you will. But we won't have Rashida Tlaib to kick around anymore. Her term ends in December, but she'll be trying to run again in November in this new 4th district seat. I guess we have to do a segue. They say in radio, you know, you should flow from one related story to another as much as possible because people, well, they're not taking notes, and you've got no graphics on the screen because there is no screen. It's only your ears with radio, okay? Dave Kinesic, who's a representative, a state representative from primarily the Dearborn Heights area. Oh, I think his district might even include Garden City. Not sure about that, but it's one of those gerrymandered districts, so you really can't predict
the spread.
What the spread is.
Yes.
Or whether it's a, you know, a one-mile narrow thing going north and south, or is it, usually it's not a big circle. You know, it's nothing that logical or a big square. You know, it's a crazy up, down, sideways thing drawn by the party who has the majority at the time of the, you know, every 10 years doing the census, that they have their computer people looking at, well, where do the Republicans live? So we'll make sure that there's even a slice of Republican majority almost everywhere, and that's where we'll draw the lines. Not having anything to do with common shared interest or common shared political problems. We'll just do it that way. Dearborn has avoided that problem pretty much. I'm not sure why, but, you know, it usually always on the east side of Dearborn, part of us is in some district with represented by primarily a Detroit representative. Dave Kinesic, he's going to try to run for Michigan State Senate. And you might say, well, was he term limited too and has to do this? No, he's only been in office like less than a year. And because there is a vacancy, he's, well, I got name recognition. I won by a lot of votes, so I'm going to go to Senate. Well, good for him. Let's hope. And now I know there's people already talking about running for his representative seat, which will be available again in the November election. And, of course, the August primary coming up. And we'll let you know how it's shaking out and who's running for what in the nearby districts, of course, on the show as soon as we find out. I think it's an April 17th or 22nd deadline when the petitions have to be in. And, of course, they have to be counted to see if there's enough names that are legitimate.
Yes.
In order to get on the ballot. And if there's enough people, then they'll need a primary runoff for some of the places where there's a lot of candidates, I think. More than two, obviously. If there's three, there has to be a primary to find out the top two, because it's only the top two that go on till November. But if there's only two people running for a place.
Mm-hmm. Well, I wanted to. I also have a clarification on the gentleman running against.
Go ahead.
Our Dingell. It is he's a Republican candidate. Auto worker Terry Bowman announced Monday that he'll seek the GOP's nomination for the 12th House District seat being vacated by Dingell.
Terry Bowman?
That's his name.
Yeah. Oh, okay. I knew a Scotty Bowman.
Yeah.
No, not the Red Wing guy. He's a libertarian who's been running as a Republican recently in Detroit area, but he's from Detroit, so probably no relation here. But he's an auto worker, so that's man of the people type stuff, right?
That's right, yeah.
Except he's a Republican.
Yep.
So that'll be a hard sell. Mm-hmm. He was down in Tennessee, and he spoke against organizing.
Yes, he did.
Even though he's a auto worker himself who's a UAW member. Kind of a turncoat kind of person there. But we'll get some of these people on the show and ask them fair questions, you know, about this. It's great. First of all, it's great that anybody wants to run for Congress, considering the kind of gridlock, and as John Dingell had called it, one reason for his retirement was what's a key word? It's kind of animosity or something. The inability to work with one another and to want to want to compromise when needed to get things done. And he didn't find anything very amicable anymore. And so that's one of the reasons he wanted to leave. Still, he fought it out for many, many years, but the current situation in politics is not a friendly one. But it is a job.
It is okay. A job.
Yes. And there's status, and there's probably benefits. Great health care, automatically. Universal single payer. Everything's paid for by the government, so you're going to have good health care once you get elected to one of these rep or Senate positions, even in the state. Okay. Well, now, moving on. Last Sunday, and all of a sudden I seem very loud. Okay. Got to watch my meters here, as they say in radio. There's a story about proposed military cuts in the federal government. Ooh, it might cut back on some of the employment at Selfridge Air Force Base. Okay, and page 13A. Okay, right, I got it from last Sunday. And of course, here's my comment here about that. You know, people say, oh, yeah, we're not defending our country properly. Selfridge is an Air Force base. It's got a lot of old jet planes, okay? Yes, there's 1,700 people there, including National Guard airmen, okay? However, what do we need them for anymore? Is Canada going to invade us? Do we have to protect ourselves against Canada? These planes are not even state-of-the-art. And, you know, the Air Force hopes to retire all 326 A-10 Thunderbolts, and that'll save the government about $3.7 billion. And in terms of safety sake, you might say, well, but illegal immigrants are smuggling across the border. What, you're going to attack them with an A-10 Thunderbolt? How do you identify them from flying at Mach 2, you know, dropping bombs from them? I mean, it's crazy. There's no practical reason why we need the Selfridge Air Force Base for, you know, mere defense anyway. I may be refueling other military jets that are on their way somewhere else. I don't know where, China, whatever. You know, I'm just saying it's okay to have a base, I guess, for refueling or maintenance if somebody's got to land their plane, there's having trouble or something, you know. Because you don't want to come down in a commercial airport if you're having plane trouble. That would not be fair to all the commercial passengers.
No, you know? That's true. But for training purposes as well.
Sure. You know. Yeah. Yeah, that's okay. Yeah. But it's like President Obama said when he was confronting some senators who were saying, you know, you're making us less free and less able to defend ourselves. We have the biggest military and the biggest military budget in the world. Bigger and better and more costly than the next 13 countries, including China and Russia, in the world. What do we need this for? Why do we need the hundreds of bases worldwide? You say, oh, to take care of Ukraine. We don't have a base near enough or big enough to take care of Ukraine because Russia's got all their troops, half of them are already in, you know, Crimea part of Ukraine. And I was thinking, people reflecting on that would say, oh, it's so bad, Crimea River.
Bad joke.
I'm sorry. I've been waiting to say that for a whole week. But and on the radio, puns are so good because, you know, anyway, they take a while to sink in.
Yeah.
So I think it's fine. You know, President Obama said, hey, you know, we don't need horses and sabers, big swords anymore, like in World War One. So we're not putting the money in the right things. So when the Defense Department said, look, here's our budget, and we're following the sequester cut of 10%, it's kind of still in effect, but a lot of stuff we don't need anymore, like those 326 A-10 Thunderbolts. I'd like to take one up and fly it around a little bit, just for a little, I'm not a pilot, but what the heck? It'd be good for about 10 seconds and I'd crash, but what a way to go. But saving $4 billion a year just because we don't have these, just like I mentioned to you, John, before the show, it was revealed that we don't need tanks anymore. You know, I mean, if somebody says, does something nice for you, you should say tanks. Thanks very much.
Thanks very much.
But, you know, bad pun number two. Look out, folks, it's early in the show. But
you're starting to get down that river of no return.
I know. hopefully don't drown. Get out of the metaphor. Okay, so, but seriously, we don't need tanks. You know, that was, I think, what caused Obama to make his comment. We have over, so many tanks. They cost more than $1 billion each. They're still being made by some country, company in the U.S. The Pentagon does not want them. They're being stored in a lot somewhere. And there's no possible future use they can think of for these tanks. Now, maybe they should send them to Dearborn to sit like their armored personnel carrier we got for $50,000 a couple of years ago, sitting unused in the police department lot. But it's a great thing for kids to play on every now and then at homecoming, you know, bring it out and polish it up. But what do we need all these tanks for? We don't need them for battle, and we don't need to spend $1 billion each on them. Great electronics. I understand they have plasma TV screens that are widescreen. They don't have any windows.
No.
The only way they can see out is through the video cameras. And they got widescreen, high res, higher than in your living room, high res screens there so they can see where they're going, which is still kind of important on the battlefield.
That makes sense to see.
Yeah. But, maybe they could sell the plasma screens to some audiophiles somewhere, videophiles, and make some money off these things. How did they get built? Why are they still being built? Because Congress, not the Defense Department, Congress wants to keep the jobs at this particular contractor, defense contractor. Okay, and the defense contractor wants to keep the money coming in, the profit margin, too. And so it's lobbying. It's lobbying for no good reason for the defense of the U.S. And what do they do with these tanks when they're done? They just sit in a parking lot somewhere in the U.S. Crazy, I think. Well, that's my opinion. We shouldn't worry. I mean, I hope that any people who are not needed in the military at Selfridge, if those cuts go ahead, I'm not saying they're closing the base. I haven't read the article that closely. But, if there are significant cuts, like the A-10 Thunderbolts, there might be a few less technicians to fix A-10 Thunderbolts, if there aren't any A-10 Thunderbolts, for example. I'm sure that the military can find a way to manage redirecting those people. There are some civilian contractors that are always supplying goods and services to the bases. There'll be less of that, of course, if the base doesn't have as many people or as many jobs. Oh, well.
Well, certainly fewer pilots as well.
Yeah. From last Sunday, deep in the back pages, it pays to, if you get a paper, and you should have a paper yourself, because I can't possibly go over all these things on 1 hour a week, but no deals, it says here also on page 13A, from Chad Selweski, who actually is out of the newspaper in Oakland County. The suburbs say that they can't trust Detroit in water system negotiations. In other words, as Detroit becomes, trying to get out of bankruptcy, the suburbs appear closer to agreement on one key piece of emergency manager blueprint, which is the 40-year deal to lease the Detroit water system to Wayne, Oakland, and Macomb counties for $47 million a year. I thought they were just going to sell it. No, they're going to lease it. Okay, they're going to lease it. I'm not sure I like that. And apparently, the February 11th memo shared among suburban officials said there's a lot of concerns here about this arrangement. And Macomb County Commissioner Jim Carabelli even said, who is a Republican, he said, this is some scary stuff. He says, I'm a little appalled with the deal that's on the table. It's such a bad deal for the suburbs. So that isn't, that's a great answer is to have, I think it should be joint ownership. And if a matter of $47 million a year for the counties will help buy it, collectively, so we all have shared responsibility and legal authority, then I think maybe it's worth it. But this is crazy to do it now with the suburbs saying it's the worst deal in the world. Okay, segue, got to go to Jack Lesenberry's column from Metro Times from the 24th of last month. As we've said here on this show and has been said by many people, cutting pensions is against the Michigan Constitution. Okay? It's I know there's a federal district judge in Michigan who said, oh, bankruptcies are an exception. It doesn't say that in our Michigan state constitution. Okay, it doesn't say that. Let me grab Lessenberry's comment from the 24th of February, because here's the direct statement from the Constitution that's in effect right now in the state of Michigan from 1963. It says the accrued financial benefits of each pension plan and retirement system of the state and its political subdivisions, like a city, shall be a contractual obligation thereof, which shall not be diminished or impaired. Period. Okay? I thought, you know, especially Republican judges who agree with the governor and so on, I thought they were strict constructionists. I thought that was a basic principle. You do only what the Constitution specifically states. You don't add or subtract, because extra duties cost extra money. Well, here it's quite clear, according to our Constitution, unless somebody wants to amend it or reject it or throw it out the window, and the only people that could do that really, I think, is the Supreme Court of the United States. It has been suggested by several groups that we should take that to the Supreme Court. Of course, it's going to take probably 5 to 10 to 20 years for them to rule on this, unless they decide to do something different. And guess what? The Supreme Court of the U.S. is pretty much, the majority is Republican nominees. So from a state with a Republican governor, whose own Republican-supported Supreme Court would say the same thing, oh, kill those pensions, because we're supporting the governor, we're supporting the Republican Party, we're going to save money by killing anybody's pensions. Who cares what the Constitution, approved by the people and the legislature and the governor, have to say about it? That seems to be the Republican position right now in the state of Michigan. And if it goes to the Supreme Court of the U.S., there's Republican-backed appointed judges in the majority there who will probably hew the party line, in spite of the fact that, I said, traditionally Republican judges always were this strict constructionist, which means the letter of the law, and that's it. Yeah. And the letter of the law is quite clear. You don't touch those state, county, or city pensions. Period. Period. Shall not be diminished or impaired. Of course, it's kind of like Vladimir Putin going against the Budapest Memorandum from the 90s in Ukraine. It says Russia, and this is a legal agreement, legal binding, big-time agreement, not just a, you know, a handshake, shall never encroach on the sovereignty of the Ukraine. That was 1993. Never do that. Okay. And by the way, you'll give us all the nuke weapons that we stored there, won't you? And we'll guarantee we'll never, ever, to use this phrase, diminish or subtract from your sovereignty. And
We followed on that sovereignty.
Yeah. So I guess anything can be changed for any reason if you have the power to do so, including laws, constitutions, whatever. That's a danger, folks. I'm kind of a strict constructionist about issues like this. I think we should follow what we agree to. If we're going to have a different direction, then let's write up another contract and agree to that. But this is crazy. And so thank you, Jack Lessenberry. Okay. Moving on, Times Herald this Wednesday. Didn't get a press and guide Wednesday because no home delivery in my area. I called them this morning. They just lost another carrier. And right before good weather, too. I can understand the carrier. The carrier only had the route for 2 weeks and then gave it up. I guess something about my street, I guess. They don't like my street. It's a cul-de-sac, so they have to come all the way down, drop the paper, and then go all the way back. And I may be the only subscriber, so what a hassle. It's only got six houses on it, though, so it's not exactly a long cul-de-sac. You know, they don't get trapped down there. They had to turn the car around. Oh, my God.
They actually got to move a little bit.
They got to turn the steering wheel all the way one way and then all the way the other way. Dearborn Public Schools apparently going to have another millage renewal this year, because there's a whole bunch. People say, didn't I just vote for that or vote against it last year?
It just happened, yeah.
No, not those millages. You see, there's a whole bunch of different ways that over the years a school district asks for millage. There's one millage for one reason, another millage for another reason, not just one big enchilada here. Now, these are only renewals, okay, of money that you're already paying here in Dearborn, And these, which are different from the ones last time you voted for, I think it's 30, 40 million of the school budget. It's not chump change here, but it's just renewals. Well, it's not going to be August. It's going to be November. But if it is November, apparently there's no chance, if it fails, to do it again before the millage expires. It's just the way the state is not allowing cities to go for a millage just whenever they want to. It's got to be like November, pretty much now. Oh. Big elections. There was a state law that they passed. So, in a way, it's a little bit risky. In case people don't understand, there won't be a second chance. We'll lose that money, and then there won't be the money, at least until it's reestablished. But it is just renewals. So don't freak out here, people. It's renewals of part of the funding for the Dearborn Public Schools. It's going to be in November. Another reason to register and vote. If you're not registered, you can't vote, remember. Okay. Moving on, Dearborn Times Herald. The Chamber, Dearborn Chamber, announces that they got a new events coordinator. Remember, Peggy Richard has moved on to some group in Dearborn. I don't think it's Access. Jeez. Anyway, Peggy, good. Hope you're having fun wherever you are. And the new person is... okay, it's right here, Times Herald. Okay, is, I think, a former student here at the college and formerly worked with the mayor of Dearborn Heights in his office. So I think he's a relatively young person, ready to do a lot of work. His name is Ronald Hinrichs. He's the new director of events for the Dearborn Area Chamber of Commerce, which is Dearborn and Dearborn Heights, a bigger group than it was before. And Jackie Lovejoy, their president, said we're excited about Ron joining and giving him all this work to do. So he coordinates all their special events and public relations and nonprofit administration throughout the Dearborn region. And so it's a lot of work. He does hold an associate, as I said, I thought so, in liberal arts with honors from Henry Ford Community College. So smart guy, at least when he was here. And also at Wayne State, he has a Bachelor of Arts with honors from Wayne State. So pretty good. He's residing with his wife and their 17-month-old daughter in Southgate.
Very good.
I guess they had cheaper home prices there for a while. Or maybe he grew up there. So Southgate's a nice place, John.
It's downriver. Nice downriver community.
Thank you for saying that. Sure, yes, it is. I have a lot of friends that live there, so it can't be bad. Nope. Okay. So welcome, Ronald. Is it Ronald? I forgot his name that quick. Oh, come on. Where is it here? I'll find it. Okay, when I get this right, Ronald Hinrichs.
Hinrichs, yep.
Yeah, I'm sure we'll be working with him. WHFR will be working with him on several of their events upcoming, and it's always great to be part of that group. They're well-managed, well-organized, and they're doing an important job. And you were mentioning, John, and I missed it. I said I was going to go to it, and then I completely forgot about it. There was a community discussion.
Right.
Last night here in Dearborn.
That's true. Last night at 6 p.m., there was a community conversation at Henry Ford Community College.
That's right. It's I would have had an automatic place to park. I know where the good spots are, so but I didn't get here.
No. And the Center for Michigan, a nonprofit, nonpartisan think and do tank, strives to be the state citizenship company.
Right. There are a number of retired journalists, really smart, critical thinking, good researching, investigative reporters who have come together to form the Center for Michigan and in Ann Arbor. And they also publish the online magazine. It's online, and it's constant, really. It's a web magazine, if you will, called Bridge. And they're often on other radio programs like the Craig Folly Show, some of their writers. They have really good investigative stories, and they're doing a great public service here. Are they left-wing, right-wing, whatever? I'd say they're just very populist-oriented. They really want to get the word out to people, as you said, encourage good citizenship, good participation. But get the real story out there. One of the things they do is the fact-checking group is part of Center for Michigan that looks into it's a truth people. Oh, what's it called? It's probably not. Is it there? It's I mentioned this a couple of weeks ago. The people that check the facts, whether Republican or Democrat, in the TV ads and the radio ads for political candidates, and that's part of what they do. Okay. So they don't take sides. They just point out. Well, that's you know, mostly false what that candidate said, or that's exaggerated or whatever. And we'll get back to you on that, because I mentioned their name in a previous show. And that's part of Center for Michigan, just an example of what a good group was. And maybe there'll be a story next week that a real reporter went to that we can jump on and share with our listeners.
Clarify.
What do they talk about? I want to know. Yeah. Inquiring minds want to know. Mm-hmm. Okay, we're going to Inquiring Minds Want to Know what Jim Hightower has to say about two things, climate change and Congress critters. I thought the alliteration was appropriate to play these back to back. So we'll be, John and I will be back with more of the new WHFR Journal for Friday, March the 7th, after the Hightower commentaries. But listen up, take notes here.
Okay, climate change deniers, you've gone too far. You've gone from just being annoying know-nothings to now posing a serious threat to an essential good that embodies humankind's finest collaboration with nature, beer. It's one thing for the science denial cult to stand in the way of doing something about melting ice caps in the Arctic, but it's another thing altogether for them to mess with beer. This makes it personal. While the deniers keep doing their denial dance, California is drying up. The higher temperatures caused by climate change has produced an ongoing drought that has, among other bad things, caused a precipitous drop in the water level of Lake Mendocino, which could come close to being a dry lake bed this summer. What has that got to do with beer? Glad you ask. Mendocino feeds the Russian River, which flows by the town of Petaluma, home of Lagunitas Brewing Company, which makes very fine beers. A key ingredient in the Lagunitas brew is the excellent water the company draws from the Russian River, which presently is in danger of becoming a trickle. Can't Lagunitas and other breweries along the river just switch to groundwater? No. The head beermaster at Lagunitas notes that heavy minerals in that water would cause it to fizz in the brewing process. Plus, there are concentrations of nitrates, iron, and manganese in the area's groundwater, creating issues of odor, taste, and other unpleasantries that do not add up to good beer. This is Jim Hightower saying, what the Lagunitas experience is teaching us once again is that the nature of nature is that all things are linked together, despite the fantasies of industry shills who insist that their contaminants have no dire consequences. Mess with the global climate, and you mess with Lake Mendocino, which messes with the Russian River, which messes with the beer. And now, you're messing with me and millions of other beer drinkers. Like I said, it's personal.
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's populist take on what the powers that be are up to. Find out more at hightowerlowdown.org.
A corporate lobbyist recently admitted to the New York Times, everybody is embarrassed about it. Although not so embarrassed that they don't do it. It is the scandalous copulation between corporate cash and willing legislators that's taking place regularly in such secretive rendezvous resorts as the Dorado Beach Ritz-Carlton. Lawmakers and lobbyists don't like to talk about what they're doing and certainly don't want voters or the media to see them, for these getaways are explicit, tawdry examples of the prostitution of our legislative system. If you had wandered innocently into the Tony Four Seasons Hotel of Vail, Colorado in early January, you could have witnessed one of these group gropes. Assorted lobbyists, including one who represents the utility giant, PPL Corporation, had slipped tens of thousands of dollars into the political pockets of Representative Ed Whitfield and four other House members for the pleasure of rubbing elbows, wining and dining, and whispering sweet legislative nothings to them for hours. At one dinner, the cozy group dug into juicy Wagyu steaks and swilled $60 a bottle wine as they played scratch-my-back Washington-style politics. Whitfield, a Kentucky Republican, was especially popular with the utility lobbyists, for he chairs the House committee that handles legislation affecting, guess who, utilities. And Ed must have had a good time in Vail, because when he returned to Washington, he promptly introduced a bill to let PPL and other electric utilities build additional polluting, coal-burning power plants, an industry favor that would overturn health protections recently approved by the Obama administration. This is Jim Hightower saying, sure, the public approval rating for Congress is at historic lows. But the veiled experience of Whitfield and the others just shows that lawmakers can be lovable. You just have to know the price.
Hi, Hightower's commentary is brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown. From Wall Street to Washington, this monthly newsletter reveals who's doing what to whom and why. Check it out, hightowerlowdown.org.
And this is the new WHFR Journal for Friday, March the 7th, 2014. This is Jay and John with you. Jay and John. Okay. And we're here reporting local news and alternative views. I just found out that today and tomorrow, it's confusing, is Unplug Day. Okay, this is national. It's a celebration of, it's a celebration. I don't know if it's official national holiday, because the banks are open, I know, but it's designated the National Day of Unplugging. Okay, and what are you supposed to do? Well, I guess it means you go and listen to music that doesn't use amplifiers, because apparently that's one of the things that some people are doing somewhere in some cities in the U.S. So I'm on the website right now, nationaldayofunplugging.com. That's right, I'm on the website, multitasking, as I'm speaking to you. Absolutely unbelievable, right? You can take the pledge. It's from, it's today and tomorrow. It's from sundown today to sundown tomorrow. So can you go without computers and electronics for one whole day? Can you stop using your iPhone, your BlackBerry, your Facebook, your Twitter? And the other bigger question is, should you? Okay. So there you go. You might try it. If you go to the website, nationaldayofunplugging.com, you can sign the pledge. And it says, then you would start living a different life. Connect with the people in your street, neighborhood, and city, because you got nothing else to do. You might talk to your neighbors. Oh, my God. And have an uninterrupted meal. Imagine eating a meal straight through without a phone ring or a tweet. Mm-hmm. Or get this, even, this is radical, read a book to your child. Of course, you have to have a book around in the first place. So maybe you go to the library, get a book. Yeah, and then read that to your child. It's radical. You have to know how to read, first of all, so maybe you could learn to read. And now I'm just getting crazy here. The project is an outgrowth of the Sabbath Manifesto, an adaptation of our ancestors' ritual of carving out one day per week to unwind, unplug, relax, reflect, get outdoors, and connect with loved ones. I think that used to be called Sunday, right? Yeah, it's a Sabbath, you know. And it was a great idea, but now everybody goes shopping.
Everybody works
on it. I mean, some people go to church on Sunday, yes, but they also then go out shopping, either before or after or both. Mm-hmm. So, I'm very much in favor of minimizing electronic devices. And, of course, the one that I think you don't want to minimize, of course, is radio.
No, we don't want
to. Because... first of all, you can do radio in your underwear. I mean, you can listen anywhere with portable devices, as well as on the internet, of course. And you can listen while you're doing other things. I often listen to the radio through the internet while I'm doing email, because it all can come together there. And most of my email is not that important that I have to concentrate on anyway. So, anyway, that's today, starting at sunset. Going to sunset or sundown tomorrow, March 7th and 8th, 2014, the National Day of Unplugging. Can you do it?
Certainly.
Can you do it? Oh, John, are you taking the pledge? Wow.
Oh, certainly. And with the thaw that's happening this weekend, it'll be a great time to go out and meet your neighbors.
Okay. There you go. Yeah. Right, because you might be chopping ice together to shovel it off the remaining bit of concrete. So there's a collective community activity.
Trying to stop the flooding from coming on in
right,
the neighborhood.
Yeah, yep. So you might be outside anyway. So, okay, just thought we'd update you on national days that really impact on your life here in Dearborn. Okay, moving on then. We've got a lot of stories that came up in the Press and Guide. A couple of entertainment items, too, we'll finish the hour with, but for this weekend. John, you mentioned earlier, this is just a follow-up, the Westwood school millage was renewed by voters in the last week or so. It was reported in the Times-Herald, and you said Downriver Community passed.
Yes, and Wyandotte also did their passed a millage.
Passed
for,
a school millage.
For their upcoming school year.
Okay, one of several, perhaps, but nonetheless. So both of these were renewed. In Westwood, by the way, which is somehow part of Dearborn Heights, the vote was 218 in favor and 172 against. And by my massive calculations here, that was 46 vote difference. Okay? And so you say, well, it wasn't close. But 23 people voting no could have made it fail, or 24 people could have made it fail. And so that's not many people. So your vote always counts, folks. Even if you think it doesn't take much to sway these elections. Many elections are decided by less than 1% of the vote, which I can never figure out. Does that mean all these people are equally qualified or unqualified for office, that it splits down the middle? That doesn't make sense to me. But even issues, half of the voting public can't make their mind up about a tax, or half can't make, you know. There is actually more diversity of opinion out there than we can believe. But it's amazing to me how closely split it usually is. Now, the only things it's not closely split on is some national issues, like something like 70-80% of the public want universal single-payer health care. Okay, not all these little things you have to sign up for. You get a card in the mail from the government. They take care of all the costs from then on. You just show the card at the hospital to your doctor, to your pharmacist. That's it. Okay, yeah, your taxes are going to go up to pay for that. It's going to be a federal program. Yeah, socialism. There you go. But it works in the other countries. It lowers costs. And how simple can you get it? You know, how straightforward? And we don't have that. So a majority of people want that, but it's not happening. Okay, so it's not the public, you know. A majority of people want to legalize marijuana, and they did in Colorado, but it's not happening nationwide. A majority of people are in favor of same-sex marriage nationally, but it hasn't happened in Michigan.
Not yet, no.
So, So even though, you think popular support should make it happen, it doesn't always show the case. So whenever there's a vote which should cause something to happen, you need to go vote, okay? Because first of all, usually half to two-thirds of the people registered don't vote, okay, in that election. So you're voting for a lot of people that are registered, but they're not even voting. And then the votes are often split down the middle. Most votes are pretty close on most every issue. In this case, in Westwood, 24 people voting against it would have made the whole thing fail. So, okay.
And one certainly doesn't have the right to complain if you don't exercise your right.
I think we always have the right to complain, but it doesn't do any good.
To make much change.
Yeah, it doesn't do any good. It's crazy to complain if you didn't vote, certainly. Yeah. Alrighty. Moving on. Dearborn Press and Guide, even though I didn't get it, at least they have a website that's updated whenever the story comes into their office. They put it on pressandguide.com. There's also a corporate website. But... Okay. Well, and this is important to me anyway. An architect now has been selected to work on the new animal shelter. Now, it doesn't mean it's going to be built, but they need a plan, and they have selected an architect. And Newman/Smith, so they write the name, one of the southeastern Michigan's most respected architectural firms, have been selected to design the new state-of-the-art Animal Adoption and Education Center for the Friends for the Dearborn Animal Shelter. The engineering partner on the project will be Ghaffari Associates, which are just down the road from where this new facility is going to be. So they're keeping some of the money in Dearborn. So the new facility is therefore going to be called the AAEC, the Animal Adoption and Education Center. And it will replace the current shelter, if and when it gets funded, it's currently at 2661 Greenfield Road, just south of I-94 overpass, which is more than 30 years old, overcrowded, and in need of renovation. Desperately in need, I would say. As a supporter for the Friends of the Dearborn Animal Shelter, myself, contributor significantly to that, they need this. Our animals need it. We need it to prove that we're compassionate enough to save animals, if not to save all the people around us. And it's going to be, they think, 21,000 square feet. I'm not sure if it's going to be where the old train station is, or take up that parking lot, or whether it's going to be just south of that parking lot, which is where they really want to put it. I don't think that's been decided. And of course, funding, nobody's got the funding. But they have been selected, and probably the Dearborn Animal Shelter is going to pay for the architect project, because without a plan, it's not in the can, as they used to say in the film business. You know, it's, and I don't mean the trash can. I mean it's not, can't be made. It can't be finished. So it does say here, unbelievable. Construction of the $4.4 million project is tentatively scheduled to begin 2014. Oh, pending continued successful fundraising.
Of course.
And I heard they only had about $1 million. I don't know when they did that fundraising. Maybe they've been saving up, but the Black Tie and Tails annual fundraiser did raise this year, which is their biggest fundraiser each year, I believe, $388,000 for this project. The city of Dearborn has pledged $600,000 and to give the land. So that's the million. Okay, almost. Those two things together. But only $3.5 million more to go.
Substantial money already. So
yeah, I don't think I can break that even with my checkbook balance, but not at all. But nonetheless, so the only criticism I make of my great friends at the Friends of the Dearborn Animal Shelter is there's probably something on their website about how to donate, but is there a specific campaign, you know, that's been identified? You know, the name, and I mean, they do fundraisers all the time, a couple a month, and I'm sure they're saving up some of the money from that after they pay for their operating expenses, which they have to raise money for because the city doesn't pay them to operate. They've got to raise their operating expenses however they can. So after that, they can save a few dollars. But why not a targeted campaign specifically for that purpose now? And maybe they've already done it. I got to check their website out. Okay. So, and does it say that here on the story? No, doesn't give their website. But just Google Dearborn Animal Shelter or search it through whatever search engine you got, and the website will pop up. So, good. I'm glad they're taking another step forward. Thank you, John, for bringing that to my attention. I haven't seen
you're
that.
You're welcome.
Mm. Okay. On March the 4th, the Dearborn Press and Guide on their website put the story up about Dearborn officials get an earful about how to make West Downtown Dearborn successful. The only problem with that is the city, as stated by Mayor O'Reilly at the February 25th council meeting, or the study session of the Dearborn City Council, is that, you know, the city doesn't really have much to say about occupancy or selling land. The city has, of course, bought a few foreclosures in the West Downtown area. They did pass recently, in the last week or so, to demolish the facade of a condemned building, which is being held up only by support beams, so that the Beer Garden bar owners can have access to the west wall that needs to be repaired. I'm not even sure where the Beer Garden, spelled in the German way, is located. Apparently it's Michigan and Howard. Doesn't sound familiar to me. But anyway, I'm sure it's a very big building there. Okay. So the city is doing what it can there. Tom Tufelski, council president pro tem, which means he's not really council president, he's number two now, since he didn't get the top votes in the last election. But he said the city needs to clean up West Downtown so it doesn't start looking like the city 3 miles to the east. Dearborn is 3 miles to the east of Detroit. Ooh, we don't want to look like that. And Councilman David Bazzi says that West Downtown needs a plan, since it can't compete with Fairlane Green and Independence Marketplace developments in Allen Park. Bazzi said, and he's, again, Bazzi does have Middle Eastern heritage here, okay? So he should know. He said, we don't need five more hookah bars on Michigan Avenue, because I think we have at least two, and there's a third one planned. And but the city doesn't control that. We can't I mean, we could, I guess, create a district or something and say that hookah bars are against the rules, more than two per mile or something. But that's not something a city would normally want to do. So the businesses have to sort that out for themselves. Why so many people think there's so many hookah smokers? Okay, I know a big Middle Eastern population is in the Dearborn area. But it's just going to split the number of people that want to smoke hookah pipes, I think, to have five of them, if Bozzi wasn't exaggerating.
I have to create a no inhaling zone.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, a business owner said paid parking hurts them, but in the story here, the city still owes between $6 and $7 million on the cost of the two parking towers, the parking decks. And it'll take 6 years to pay them off at about $1.1 million a year. And by the way, most of that is not being raised by fees from parking. Okay, they don't have enough people parking there to even pay. So the city of Dearborn is paying a significant portion. I don't know, half, two-thirds, less than that, I don't know. But they're paying a significant portion, whether it's even a third, of the $1.1 million a year to try to pay off the parking decks. Now, it's interesting to me, just down the road, it's interesting to me that if that's paid off, well, then could we have, free parking in West Dearborn?
That'd be great.
It would be. But 6 years away, we go with all those vacant storefronts in West Dearborn for 6 years more. That help the climate in West Downtown Dearborn for business. Of course, they're saying that when the intermodal train station gets up and running, which is later this year, supposedly, that will encourage more people to stop and maybe wander away from the train station into West Dearborn businesses, if there's any there to wander to. So more businesses may open.
Perhaps attract more businesses, of course.
And maybe not any more hookah bars if they're coming from Ann Arbor or Chicago or something to get here. Finally, Mayor O'Reilly said, if you want to have bigger advertising budgets or something for come to Dearborn or buy a business in Dearborn. He said the city budget season's coming up soon. The fiscal year starts July 1st, so the council could get together and make a proposal. Whether or not they'll be able to fund it is something else, of course, but that's what I'm saying. And a fun time was had by all. All right, moving on. The new garage ordinance that we've been talking about has finally been totally approved. They may phase that in. Information is going to go up on the city website. There's going to be publications, but they've already got 32 violations, apparently, and they're start notifying people. I'll go through it quickly for those that hadn't heard about it. From now on, because it's the new law in Dearborn, one garage is permitted per residential lot. That's right, one. Okay. No garage can be used as habitable space. And there's details on here. I'm just doing the basics. Three. Renovations like permanent enclosure of a garage with a framed wall, brick, or siding or materials require city permits and inspections. Okay, so any renovations of a permanent enclosure of a garage will require permits. Faucets and utility sinks that meet the city code are permitted, as well as basic electrical service for quote-unquote minor repairs or hobbies. Or plugging in your electric lawnmower. Hey, that would be good for the environment. Okay, that's all permitted. By this ordinance, garages must be enclosed only by a non-transparent overhead retractable door that allows vehicles to enter and exit freely. So not these sliding doors. Okay. Now, sliding glass doors are permitted by the new ordinance on the side or back of the garage, but not the front. Okay. And there's a size limitation, too. 8 feet wide is the limit for a service door, which would be a sliding glass door that wasn't at the front. By the way, carriage doors, old-fashioned days, they had, I think, hinged on the side. Those are carriage doors for garages. Mm-hmm. John's saying, he's certain about this. Okay. Like old-time barns and that in Dearborn would have had carriage doors that hinge on the side. So you can have carriage doors if the city approves. The door must meet state building code standard for doors. The state of Michigan has code standards for doors. Yeah, scary. Okay. And somebody was upset. One resident was there at the council meeting and said, this is a personal issue. And Council President Susan DeBaggio said it wasn't a personal issue, it was a safety issue. And the resident snapped back, it's not going to work because you don't want it to work. In other words, you say it's safety and I say it's personal. So, but who has the power? Cerini, the new Cerini on the council, Mike Cerini, asked city officials when the ordinance would be enforced. It's not 30 cases. There's 12 cases pending. And, of course, it's going to be phased in. It'll be on the city website. It'll be in the community newsletter, the back fence. It's mailed out. And even those that are in violation, and if they'll let them know early, but they'll give them time to comply. Obviously, maybe time to get a whole new garage door priced and installed. That would be a significant cost. I would give them, 3 months, 6 months, something like that. Just to be realistic, if you're going to do, you got to get the money together.
Save the and cash so on. For that,
but yeah. They saw this was because 13 months, folks, and 17 public meetings on this issue. Finally, something was done. And the vote was 6-0 with one absent last Tuesday at the council meeting. The absent person, if you want to know, was Councilman Brian O'Donnell. Okay. Mm-hmm. What else do we know? Oh, almost nothing that we can talk about. It's almost 2:00 and time for, therefore, Highway 61, the best in the blues from 2 to 6 p.m. with Joanne Kurczynska. And that is coming up in just a moment. Tonight, Dearborn Symphony Orchestra, 8 p.m. at the Ford Community and Performing Arts Center. So don't forget about that. It's a pops concert. So you say, well, I don't know about that classical music from hundreds of years ago. This is pop music, but played by the full symphony. And it's really like jazzy and popular stuff that you'll probably recognize. And in addition, they've got Rich Ridenour, or is it Mark Ridenour? Well, anyway, the Ridenours are there. Ridenour's, is it his younger brother, is with the Canadian Brass, and he's going to be playing trumpet.
That's actually his son.
His son, yes. Okay, thank you, John. And they're going to be playing trumpet tonight. We're going to have a couple of our WHFR people there at the at the front door, let you know that we're a great, proud sponsor of the Dearborn Symphony, co-sponsor, and I think we have a donation basket out front, too, so don't forget that. I hope it's going to be a lot of fun for everybody. Pops concerts are always popular, usually, because the music is recognizable, even though performed by every instrument in the symphony. But having somebody from the Canadian Brass there, too, they're known for having a lot of brass. Okay.
Very good.
Yeah. They toot their own horns. Did you know that, John? Yeah, they do. Yep. More people should. That's all we have time for on the new WHFR Journal today. Thank you for listening very much. Thank you, John, for sitting in. Go out and get copies of and read and subscribe to the local papers in your areas. And keep in touch with us if you have any comments. It is WHFR, our email, whfr@hfcc.edu. Mention the journal or something in the subject heading, and I'll get it within a day or so. Looking forward to shows coming up March 28th, pretty much the whole hour. It's a couple weeks away with State Representative George Duraney right here. Tough questions. And April 11th, Mayor O'Reilly. All our tough questions, send them to me, whfr@hfcc.edu. Okay, it's now time. Yes,